This is the ExtraTime.com Friday podcast. I'm Oisín Langan. I hope you're keeping safe and well. Last night, the Republic of Ireland getting a draw against Portugal. What did you think of the performance? There was kind of a mixed reaction, I would say, on the television coverage. Richie Sadlier was positive. Liam Brady was kind of positive, but not overly so. Brian Kerr was complimentary, but then had a little Mean Girl style swipe at Stephen Kenny. And Damien Delaney seemed over the moon. Just in case you didn't see any of it last night, or maybe you did and you want to remind yourself, here we go. We'll start with Liam Brady.
I don't want people to think I'm mealy-mouthed about Stephen Kenny. I think he's doing a pretty good job, but whether he's the man to take it forward or not, I think we should wait before we make that decision.
We started a little nervously, and I think Portugal had a lot of possession early in the game. I think 20 minutes into the last 20 minutes of the first half really come into it, and Chidozie was causing them a lot of problems at his pace, and Callum Robinson and Matt Doherty was breaking down the right, and we were really coming into game with a lot of corner kicks, and we showed more quality. Second half, I felt we overall were the better team. You know, and I think we're a better team second half and controlled a lot of the game. And we're disappointed not to win. We've had a legitimate goal ruled out, so we're disappointed.
Excellent. For me, the best performance of Stephen Kenny's reign. Not just the result, which I think is a great result, but the manner in which they went about it. They looked very evenly matched with Portugal. They gave equally as good as what they got, if not even a little bit more. The composure that they showed in moving the ball from the back third into middle third and into the attacking third was fantastic. Ogbeni had the game of his life. I mean, incredible performance from him. Jeff Hendrick is a man reborn. He looks like he's discovered his desire, really, or his mojo with Ireland. He was brilliant, especially in the first half. But all around, a fantastic performance. And Stephen, the player, is going to be extremely proud of what they've done tonight.
But all round, good performance by Ireland. But, you know, truth of it is, while the team is improving, and Stephen will tell us a lot of very good stats after the match, like one loss in nine games and so on, we've 6 points and we need to beat Luxembourg in the last match.
That late defeat, Ronaldo's goals in the 97th minute in Portugal, is the only defeat in eight games and nine games, isn't it? So I think another clean sheet, and you know, obviously we haven't managed to score tonight, but we're getting better. And we want to improve again. We want to get ready for Sunday.
It would be lovely to sit here and talk about a win. It would be great to think, even in fair, if we held on with 1-0 with a minute to go. But we didn't. And I keep coming back to it. I hope my positivity doesn't sound like it's kind of couched in negativity, because the realistic expectations of the squad that we have, given so many of them are new to international football, I think has to be factored into any analysis of
where we're going. Briefly, why wouldn't you wait?
Because I think we've seen absolutely everything we've seen from Stephen's approach and the players' response. I think we've seen his approach to blooding new players, and the value value of waiting to see how he does in friendlies.
Everybody's blooding new players. I had a stat
there. You've asked me a question. Yeah. Let's presume you want me to answer it. The friendlies in March, I don't think, are particularly important. And if he's not the manager, then get him out of there and get the proper manager to take the full Nations League campaign. There's an advantage to replacing him if he's going to be replaced.
I don't agree, though. If you're undecided or you're not sure, let's wait for more evidence.
So Richie Sadlier and Liam Brady getting a little bit testy on RTE TV, but it was very entertaining. And it was great to hear the two opposing views. Interestingly enough, we've got Joe Gamble coming on a little bit later on, and he's in no rush to extend Stephen Kenny's contract. And that's something I debate with him a little bit. On Virgin Media Television, Brian Kerr and Damien Delaney, again, a bit like Sadlier and Brady, were on, I don't know if I'd say opposite sides of the coin, because in fairness to Kerr, he was complimentary of the performance, but then he couldn't resist that little dig, could he? It certainly sounded like a dig anyway, of, oh, well, you know, Stephen will come out and say that it's one loss of nine, but ultimately we're not where we should be in the group. Brian Kerr is a fantastic pundit and a fantastic analyst, by the way, but some of the things that he says about Stephen Kenny are kind of funny. He quite obviously maybe is annoyed that Kenny seems to be getting a bit more leeway than he got, which I don't think is the case, but maybe that's why there's always a little swipe here or there. Damien Delaney was very positive, and Stephen Kenny, as you heard there, that those are clips we took from his interview with the Virgin Media. He's very, very happy. Lots of stuff happening this weekend in the Women's National League. Piemont and Shelburne vying for the title. If Piemont draw and Shelburne win, then we are going to a playoff, which will take place next week. If you want a full preview, by the way, of the Women's National League action, go to last Monday's podcast. Dave Donnelly spoke to us about that in detail. The only detail we didn't have then was the fact that the playoff has been confirmed. Ireland taking on New Zealand in the rugby tomorrow at the Aviva. Interestingly enough, Andy Farrell hasn't made mass changes to his team. Jemison Gibson-Park keeps his place at scrum half. Ian Henderson comes into the second row. Will we offload like we did against the Japanese? I'm not sure we'll have as much of the ball, but it'll be interesting to see what kind of style we play. Tonight, the women's rugby team take on the USA at the RDS. Lots of noise around them going into tonight's game, so it can't be easy. But fair play to them, by the way. They are standing up and they are saying, look, things aren't overly right and they need to be sorted. And there could be more on that to come. In the Club GA action over the weekend, some of the standout games, and of course I'll leave some out here, and if I do, feel free to wallop me. Lochmore Castellani taking on Thurles Sarsfields in the Tipperary Senior Hurling Final. Lochmore Castellani, what a club they are. They're also in the Senior Football Final in Tip with mostly the same players, which is pretty impressive. Kilmacud Crokes taking on Nafina in the Dublin Hurling Final on Saturday night. That's live on RTE television. Kilmacud Crokes is the club I play with at the lowest possible level, but there's a lot of excitement around the place. Nafina have never won a Dublin Senior Hurling title. I think it'll be an intriguing battle. And Crokes looked really good in the semi-final against Coola. And if they replicate that performance, I would fancy them to win. But Nafina has some very good players. In Carlow, Éire Óg vying to win another Carlo title. Reached a Leinster final a couple of years ago. Unlucky to be beaten by Ballyboden St. Enda's. They'll very much fancy themselves in the Carlo decider this weekend. Cross McGlen Rangers, the aristocrats of club football, taking on Clan Aaron, who are looking for a first senior title since the 60s. Actually, have I got that wrong? I don't have it in front of me. Are they looking for a first senior title since the 60s, or have they reached the final for the first time since the 60s? Either way, a long wait ends for them if they win on Sunday. For Cross McGlen, the wait not so long, but they kind of judge themselves on Ulster titles. The Tyrone County Final is also on this Sunday at 5:30. It's going to be streamed by Tyrone GA. It's a little pricey, but it could be worth it. It could be a very good game. Though some of the games going on over the weekend, I've probably left some out there. And if so, I do absolutely apologise. Right, let's get back to the Ireland game. We'll hear from Dave Donnelly in a little while. But first, it is former Ireland international Joe Gamble. Joe, of course, a UEFA qualified coach. Played for Cork City, played for Barnet, played for Reading, played for Hartlepool. A very experienced football man. Was also coaching Chidozie Ogbene when he came through Limerick. And knew him pretty well from Cork City as well. Joe, what did you make of the performance last night? Because there seems to be actually kind of a little bit of a debate as to whether or not Portugal were really up for this, so maybe it takes away a bit from Ireland getting the draw. I'm not sure. Anyway, what did you think? Good, bad or indifferent?
I think you have to say it was a good performance. Obviously, look, there was probably parts of it that were maybe indifferent, but on a whole, I mean, especially the second half, I thought we were excellent, really, against such a top opposition. You know, it's one thing to play well against maybe, you know, an opposition of the likes of Luxembourg and Azerbaijan, but when you're playing against the best nations in Europe and the best players in the world, and it's a different feat. But overall, I think the players and the coach staff and as a country, we can be very proud, really.
There was some suggestion that Portugal weren't up for it and didn't play their strongest team. Now, both of those statements may well be true, but is it unfair to criticise Ireland for that? Is it unfair to take away the credit from Ireland because Portugal chose the route that they took?
No, I mean, look, you can only play what's in front of you. So I think that kind of comment is a bit disrespectful to everyone, really, to play, Irish players and the Portugal players. I mean, as you said, like, I mean, if you look through our team in general, I mean, they got Fernandes, they got Ronaldo, those two players alone are top draw. You have Pepe at the back, who's won Champions League, played in top teams all his career. You have players at that level, Paulinho, midfielder, next midfielder. I mean, look, they're all those players with the so-called B team would start in the Irish team, no doubt about it. I don't see not one player in their team that probably wouldn't start in our team. But I think that you're only as good as what you play against. So you can only force your game and the style of play that you play against the opposition that play against you. So Ireland were very good. I mean, it was simple as that. I mean, the first 20 minutes, I thought we gave them too much possession, too much time. And against that opposition, you will be punished if it went on longer. So that, like, we did kind of change a little bit. I think the 5-3-2 with Ogben up front, it didn't really work early doors. And then after a while, we kind of got the gist of it and we kind of pressed a bit better. And we were a bit more on the front foot and we were kind of a bit more, I suppose, territory-wise, higher up the pitch. So therefore, you know, we just didn't give them an easy chance to build up and get their game going. But I think overall, I thought we were very, very good, especially in the second half. There were some passes of play there when we played out from the back. We were through Hendrick and Cullen and played a lovely 1-2 around the corner. Good link-up play with the strikers. And we caused them all the problems. Like, we didn't finish off those moves, but I mean, they were excellent to see. And you could see that the players were growing more and more confident the more and more the game was going.
From what you saw of Ireland tonight, do you think they can get better again? Because that was pretty much the exact same 11 as started against Azerbaijan and possibly Qatar. I think there wasn't too many differences. Obviously, Omar Bamadeli missed out through injury. And they did create chances, as you say. And they looked maybe a little bit more solid in midfield. Teams had been getting through us. Tonight, Portugal, of course, they got through us at times because they've got very good players. But they weren't doing it all the time. They weren't doing it at will.
Yeah, I mean, look, the question you asked, can we get better? Of course we can. I mean, after the match, I think Richard Sadler said about the three players that it was their first start in this season for 3 months. I think he said, and then you had 2 or 3 debutants like McGrath and Chidoze. No, okay, they played maybe 2 months ago, but it was the first 3 or 4 games. We were saying that it was so inexperienced and players are not as fully matched with as they should be. Like, you can only be positive by it. I mean, those players will feel, you know, 10 foot tall after the game, playing such a big opposition, but also play really well, not just hang in there or we got a lucky draw or, you know, they missed chances. I mean, they didn't create a lot of chances and they had a bit of possession of it in the first half especially, but they never really cut us open. It wasn't like we had the attack where they're getting behind us, the ball is across the box, they had a shot, they came out, they had another shot and they kept recycling possession. They didn't do that. Like, it was probably a sporadic attack here and there. So the players will definitely feel a lot more confident, and the whole management team and the whole coaching staff and what they believe in will definitely give them more confidence to go, right, lads, we're on the right track. Let's refine it. Let's get a bit better at it and what have you. But look, with the formation, as you said, about teams playing through midfield, it's one of those, look, 5-3-2 or 5-3-4-3, there's a lot of holes to be played through there. I don't know. I mean, I'm not 100% sure in that formation myself personally. But I think we were a lot more solid and we did force teams to play out wide. But I just think if their wing went really high and the fullbacks went really high, they would outnumber us very easily out wide and they could switch play very easily. So I'm not too sure on that one. Against them, if they were really going in for the game, could they have caused a lot more problems? Don't know. But I think in terms of the midfield performance, I do think we were solid. Cullen and Hendrick were very good. McGrath, I think, lost his way a little bit. I'm not too sure, you know, in that formation, did he shine an awful lot? But look, I thought we were very, very good. To be honest, 1-11, very good.
Well, there were so many positives, so we'll pick up on a tiny negative there. Jamie McGrath, you mentioned there, maybe didn't have his best game. Why do you think that was? And funnily enough, Ray Houghton said the same thing when he was coming off. He said he never really got into the game.
I don't know. I think, is he a club level? Is he more used to a traditional 10 or is he an 8? I think he was kind of more of a flat three midfield. So he had to get himself out left wing a lot and kind of maybe do a lot of workload like that. Not that he didn't suit him, but look, he's a grafter, in fairness to the kid. I wouldn't say that. I don't know. He just didn't seem to affect the game on the ball. I mean, look, I don't think he had a terrible game and I don't think he lost a lot of possession, but he just never seemed to be on the ball a lot. Maybe we bypassed him a lot. Maybe Cullen and Hendrick were dropping deeper to get on the ball, and McGrath couldn't find those spaces in between our midfield and our strikers. It just didn't seem to fall for him. I don't know. I couldn't really put a finger on the ground.
Yep. And Ogbeni's pace seemed to cause them an awful lot of trouble. Now, his final ball maybe could do it improving. And this is something actually that you talked about the last time you were on, the last time we watched an Ireland game. But again, when you look ahead to the future, and by the future, I mean maybe Sunday night, it does look like a player who can stretch teams. He does look like a player that if we can get the best out of him, then maybe even if he can't finish, he can supply Robinson. But at times tonight, obviously, Robinson was drifting out wide. And there was one time he got out wide, got across him, but it actually turned out to be a shot. And Ogbeni didn't quite read it. There was another time when Ogbeni probably should have just touched it to Robinson
but he just couldn't get the ball out of his feet. He couldn't sort his feet out in time. And maybe, and again, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, maybe that's something that comes with a bit more experience at a higher level. Maybe that's something the next time that happens, he just immediately knows, right, just get the ball out to him. Now, Benny's in his mid-20s, but he's playing at a high level for a relatively short amount of time. So I think we can be very excited about those two. But first of all, I want you to address the what we saw from the two of them tonight.
Yeah, but I thought Robinson was excellent. I thought he was the best player on the pitch by a long shot, to be honest, that his whole of play, especially when he played through the middle with his back to play. I thought his whole of play was excellent, and he managed to swivel in a half turn a few times and was just lively. You know, he just looked as if he could create something. He got one or two shots off. I think personally, I would like to see Ida play and maybe Robinson on left, you know, as your right wing. I'd like to see that because, look, you know, he isn't really a centre forward. Like, his strength isn't, he can play with back to play, but he's going to miscontrol balls. He's not going to be able to link up. But that's not his game. He's not technically proficient in tight areas. He's okay, and he'll use his body to protect the ball. But at this level, you won't get time to even do that. Players are on you like a rash.
And did we see that, Joe? And sorry to cut across. Did we see that when the ball kind of came to him in the box and he should have just one-touched passed it to Robinson, but he didn't. He kind of fumbled.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm probably more on, actually, like, as in proper hold of play, with your back to play and set the back up his backside a little bit, that he isn't he's not able to play one touches to the midfielder or ball around the corner, or, you know, he's going to struggle at that part of the game. What the instance you're on about, I've maybe got caught in two minds whether the square or not, and that, I think that might come with maybe more game time, more sharpness, but like that, that's where you see his weaker points, where that sort of quality in terms of technical ability, where he's sharp and he can play around the corner quickly, he can play really one touch, two passes. That's not his game. His game is really when you saw Daniel Orr try to run him on the line, he wasn't going to catch him. That's his game. Like, yeah. I think he's an out-and-out winger, and I think if we can leave him there and then cheat a little bit, you know, I'm not saying don't track back, I'm not saying don't come inside to be defensively as a team, but you know what, he can be the one player, you know what, what you do is you stay out there, you hang out there, yeah, you do your defensive work, but you know what, when we get the ball, you don't even have to look, he just switch on, because if he gets the ball 1v1, I don't care who he plays against, if he knocks the ball away, he get a corner, he get a free kick, and it's very, very rarely that he won't get one of the other or get across in the box, because there's not too many players that will be able to that'll handle his pace. So you can see that when he was able to run in open space that he caused problems, and he got corners, he got free kicks, he created something, got a bit of a buzz going. You could see the players respond to him and the crowd will get going. That's what Chidozie has in abundance. So if you start changing him and start trying to be a link-up player or be a centre-forward, but he's back to play, you won't see the best of him. And I actually think that I just don't think he's going to be effective at all in that position, to be quite honest.
And do you think that we should try and keep Robinson in a more central position, or did he do exactly what he should be doing for Ireland against Portugal? Because he was popping up absolutely everywhere, but at the same time, maybe you're taking a threat away from goal if he's out on the wings, if he's, you know, behind play a bit.
Yeah, and he's a different player to Chidozie. So he's more, if you put him on the left wing, he's going to drift to his right leg. He's going to be looking to play 1-2s. He's going to be looking to come in and look for bodies to play. You know, he hasn't got the explosive pace that he's going to knock and run you. He's not going to be that type of winger. But you could easily have, you could have an alternative where, yeah, he comes in a bit more narrow. He might link up with Ida, for example. You might have Stevens bombing on outside him. And then you could have the likes of Chidozie, right? You're going to be out wide and you just support from behind. So Doherty can support from behind, or he can underlap inside to take away the fullback, give Chidozie even more space to run at him. So you can have a different sort of variation on different wingers, because not many teams are going to have open out wingers who are absolutely too rapid. And you might not have two wingers that are going to be very in narrow and want to play all the time. So we can definitely mix it. I think for me is just a proper target. I mean, he can hold the ball. He's a better presence on him. I think he needs to release the ball a lot quicker. Yeah. I just think he kind of, towards the end, you can see that he was trying to take a chop and then he lost the ball. Where, like, that's now where he needs to sharpen up. I know he's a very young lad, in fairness. But when you're facing, you know, your goal, just give the ball as quick as you can to the nearest player and then go again. He doesn't have to take someone on, you know, every time or take unnecessary touches. I think if we went with that front three, I think we'd have caused him even more problems, to be honest.
Okay. Well, we'll move on to the Luxembourg game now. We will also talk about Stephen Kenny's contract, because it's it's a strange situation, isn't it, that we don't just talk about games anymore. We always seem to talk about a manager's contract afterwards, especially when it comes to the Ireland manager. But for Luxembourg, would you go with the same starting 11 as was tonight, or would you start Ida against Luxembourg on Sunday? Would you make any other changes aside from that?
I think I would bring in Ida. Yeah. I think, look, Norman, the sort, as I said, maybe the last Portugal game, the same. Norman sort of be dropped because everyone played really well. But if you, I think for Luxembourg, we need to go on the front foot. We need to win that game, and we need to really put in the same performance and more. So I go with Robinson left, Ida through the middle, Chidozi on the right. I think the two midfielders, Hendrick and Cullen, are the same. You can't change that in the same back five. So I think the back five midfield pick itself. And I think I'll just be a bit more attacking-wise in that sense. Rather than having a 5-3-2, go 5-2-3 or a 3-4-3, whatever you want to call it, because they can interlink a little bit. But that's what I would think. I think I'd be surprised if we didn't go over that.
And do we go with the same tactics as we did against Portugal? Because this is something you talked about before, that maybe against Azerbaijan at home in the 1-1 draw, we tried to be too attacking. And we actually should have done exactly what we'd done in the Algarve a couple of days earlier. Do you think we should do that against Luxembourg?
You know what? Again, look, it depends on the opposition as well. But I don't know. I mean, look, we did press tonight and it did really, I think it worked well. Yeah. And I'd be amazed if we don't do the same again. Personally, I think we mixed up a little bit. You know, if we're not getting joy with the press and we're not really clicking, you know, there's no harm letting them come on to us a little bit. There's no harm for maybe 5-10 minutes just to drop off a little bit. Let's see what they do and see the space open for like Chidozi and Ida and Robinson to get in behind. So I personally would be surprised if we don't press, and I probably would press at the start. If that's not working and we don't see the change, I would definitely drop off a little bit and entice them to come on to us and see what they have. Because the space in behind will suit our front three more than if they drop off, and if they camp in our own box, it'll be hard for us to break them down. But answer your question, I think we should press them at the start.
Okay, there'll be lots more debate about that Luxembourg game in the next couple of days. There'll probably also be debate about Stephen Kenny and whether or not he should get another contract. There's also another debate that always happens after Ireland games, and that's the debate on how the pundits performed and what line they took. Liam Brady very much took the line that we should wait because we have the time, whereas Richie Sadlier seemed to be saying, well, you know what, let's get him locked in because that gives him a bit of confidence. It gives a bit of a surety around the place. We kind of know what we're at then. We know what our plans are. We're not wondering. We're not waiting. And maybe it takes the uncertainty out of the air. Where do you sit on this?
Personally, I probably would be the Liam Brady stance. Only because, look, okay, go back a small bit. I think, first of all, and we speak about Stephen Kenny way, way too much in every single match, every single training session. It's like the Stephen Kenny show. Like the man can't do right for no wrong, because like there's too much emphasis on him and his tactics and his players, and look at the players, maybe the coaches, but look at the players, are they performing? It's not, the manager can't be responsible for every single thing the players do. He can only do so much. You can only put
the change in tactics and the change in how we play is so radical that could only have come from Stephen Kenny. So can you not understand why that makes him a central debating point? That makes him a real that's why we talk so much about Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, of course, and I think his background hasn't helped him. I think he hasn't been in the Premier League, hasn't managed in England at top level, and he wasn't top level himself, and that attracts another sort of ball. But you know, he can't do that level, and that definitely attracts a lot of heat as well. But like, what I would say is the FAI knew what they were bringing in. They knew that Stephen was the man that would try this and would try to change the culture and try to play football, but he's inherited with a group of players that he can, like, it's not like a club manager where he can go buy players. I mean, that's a different testament of a manager. He has to deal with what he has. He can only do so much. And in fairness to him, he's been brave and he said, right, look, I'm going to give Devlin his games. Go and try to change the way we play. Why can't we play a different style? Why can't we be a bit more possession based and what have you? So I can see all those factors, but I still think, though, it's like there's too much emphasis on Stephen Kenny, though. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's to the stage where I don't know what it is, but like, just leave the man be for a while. Let him play. Let his team play. Let's judge him at the end of the campaign. I would personally say the same thing. Really, give him a bit more time and look at the whole thing, because we lost against Luxembourg, against Azerbaijan, we drew. So those games we should win in, right?
Yeah.
Now we play well against Portugal away and we get a draw home. Like, and all of a sudden, oh, we should give him a contract. Like, if we lost tonight with Richard Salyer, said, I don't think he would have. You know what I mean? So it's sometimes I think we're caught up in a bit of a bubble of the actual moment. And then, right, okay, we should. Like, look, listen, you've got to deserve a contract. You've got to deserve anything in professional sport. Has he deserved another contract? My honest opinion is, I don't think so. Not yet, anyway. Not what I've seen. But I do think there's massive progress. But don't judge him now. Give him till the summer and then, okay, and then have a look at it in the court later day and go, right, where are we going? And is he the man to take it on? He is, right? Bring him to the contract and just be done with it. But I think, personally, just give him time.
Do you think it makes any difference to him whether or not he gets another contract now, or even the players? Because they might be thinking, if he doesn't get a contract now, maybe that's a sign that people aren't happy and they want to change him, and maybe that creates a bit of a bad atmosphere or an uncertainty. Or does it have any effect on the players, on the squad?
Personally, I think no, it has no effect.
Okay.
I'm surprised with anything, because I just think players are players, they get on with it. I mean, look, personally, I would say a lot of players, I don't know too many players that actually play for the manager. Like, first of all, you play for yourself, play for your teammates. Yeah, of course, you have a trust in the manager, he's got trust in you, and yeah, you've got to repay a bit of that. But I've never seen a player go on a pitch and want to play bad for any reason. So everyone wants to play well. So, and was Stephen Kennedy worried? At the end of the day, he's been around long enough. I don't think it fazed him. I think whether we talk about him or get the contract, he doesn't get a contract. Look, he knows he's in the job today. He knows he's got whatever time. He's going to do the best he can. And whatever happens, if he deserves him, he gets one. Yeah. I honestly think that players, and I would be surprised if it doesn't weigh as much as what the media make it out to be.
Yeah, I wonder, is it just a talking point outside of the bubble? Because players
would think
play.
So.
Yeah, players would play. But they do seem to have responded well to him. I mean, and I wonder, does that come from him going in and saying, because if you're a football player, right? Well, okay, mm-hmm. Look, do you know what? Because I've never been a football player, I'll use an example from my own career, because I think it's probably the same for everyone in their job. If someone mm-hmm. comes into you and says, "Jesus, that was a great commentary, well done." It's rare that that happens, Joe, but if someone was to come in and say, "That was a great commentary," I'd be like, "Oh, Jesus, thanks. I'm going to definitely try and keep you happy." And that motivates me because they're giving you positive feedback. I do wonder if the players, it's probably a ridiculous comparison that I make there, but I wonder, does him saying to the players, "Look, I actually think you can play good football and this is how we're going to do it," and now they're getting the results, I wonder, does that fill them with a bit of confidence? Does that give them faith in him, and does that create just a good bond and a good atmosphere around the place?
Of course, Oisin. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all human. Everybody wants to be loved. Let's be honest. If your boss comes in tomorrow and said, "Oh, it was fantastic," straight away you feel good. I mean, I don't care if you are, you know, the top player ever to play the game. It doesn't matter what level you play the game. If your manager, your boss, for example, comes in and gives you a pat on the back and says this and praises you, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, everybody, human nature, we all want to be told we did well. Right, so I think the players will buy into it, because you can be guaranteed the football sessions and the training sessions are all football based and they're all player friendly sessions of 5v5s and with tactical elements in with them. Obviously, all players want to play football. Right? I from my own experience, if a manager comes in the morning and says, "Oh, we want to play from the back, we want to play through midfield, we see you as a focal point, this, that, and the other, and you want to work on things," players gravitate to that because they want to play football. I don't know too many players that will get enjoyment from, "Right, lads, get out of your friend. Okay, defenders, get out of the ball. We're going to smash it up to him. Midfielders, get up, win the second ball, suffocate him, put the ball in the box, put throw-ins in the box. We're going to play this way." I don't know. Too many players will start rubbing hands and go, "That's great, Gaffer. I want to play like that." They don't. They'll do it because they have to do it. And obviously, it's results-driven. If they get results, they'll buy into it. Majority of players want to play football. They want to be on the ball. They want to feel like they're like a kid. They want to play football within the right, you know, constraints of professional sport. You know what I'm trying to say? But so these players, of course, will grab to Steve Kenny because he's coming straight and go, "Oh, we want to play. I want to play from the back. I don't want you to be afraid. Be brave." They're all going to love it. So, you know, like, that's why he's probably getting responsive. It's great because then obviously if they get a few results like tonight, that then gives it more vindication of he's doing well and the players will grab it to it. So, you know, that's probably what's happening at the moment.
Joe, just before I let you go, I'm looking at last night, because of course this goes out on a Friday and we'd never dare to record something on a Thursday and say it was a Friday podcast. We'd never do that. It's almost midnight. We're well covered. We're almost there. But anyway, hang on a few minutes. We can genuinely say last night. But I'm just looking at the starting 11. You've got Ogbene, a Cork man. Mm-hmm. You might well have had Alan Brown, a Cork man, had he been fit and ready to play. You've got John Egan, is very strongly connected to Kerry, but a Cork man. Yeah. Ladies football.
He's an adopted Corkman in a certain way. Yeah, but yeah.
Sure, born and raised in Cork, played for Bishopstown, so he's a Corkman. Ladies soccer. Conor Horahan came in, a Corkman. Yeah. Adam Eden, another Corkman. Yeah. Daryl Horgan, not in the squad last night, but played for Cork City. We'll exclude him, but I just wanted to mention it. As a Cork football person,
can we take Shane Long along the way as well? Can he play for Cork City? He lived down in Roy.
Yeah, we'll give you Shane Long, and we would have given you Kevin Doyle had he still played as well. But come here. How proud as a Cork footballing person are you that Cork has this much representation in the squad? And you know what? I'm kind of messing there and doing the awes and a great time, Cork lads. But it's a kind of a serious point as well. That Cork is the second city. It's a sporting city. And it's one thing I love about Cork as a county. I'd never say it's a football county. I'd never say it's a hurling county. I'd never say it's a rugby county. I'd never say it's a soccer, athletics, Bavin, because it's all of those things. And that's what I one of the reasons.
And don't worry, we got gold medals down as well, Oisin. Gold medals everywhere in the Olympics down there.
Exactly. But the point is Cork now, does Cork now have the representation it really should have in the Ireland squad? Because like for years, there might have been one or two, and don't get me wrong, there were some brilliant players. But are you kind of thinking to yourself as a Cork footballing person, you know what? God, it's great we have this representation, but we're big enough city stroke county, we should have this representation.
Yeah, we should definitely have the representation. Like, I mean, look, Cork is sport mad. I mean, look, people like live for sport down here. I mean, and as you said, and it could be any sport. Like if you're doing well in Cork, people will know, will talk about you, will know, whether they're not into soccer, hurling, or rugby or boxing, what you name it, road bowling, everything. Like, people are obsessed in Cork about sport, and it's great to see so many people doing well. But look, it's just you know, we're modest by nature, really, and we just get on with it, and we're hardworking people. Like, so there is no fuss about it. We just get on and do the job, and I think it's great to see so many fellas, and it's not just the city. You've got the county boys, and I said, you know, it's all over County Cork. And it's a privilege, really, that so many lads are doing well. And but look, it's also it's down to them. They've obviously grafted to get where they are, and you know, it's great to see that.
And is it just a coincidence, or does it suggest that systematically something is going right in Cork? And I never mentioned Caoimhín Kelleher, who's at one of the clubs in the world. And in my roundup of sports, I never mentioned rowing, which is, as you said, a sport that you have a gold medal in. Is it a systematic thing? Or is it just that there just happens to be a crop of players in around the same age and they've come through?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but look, you know, as you said, Oisin down in Cork, we think we're the real capital of Ireland. So we're a bit funny that way. I mean, we have our own sort of language, and we have our own sort of thing going on down there. So it's probably one of those things, but other people might say different. But we are a different breed, definitely, compared to the rest of Ireland, for sure.
Okay, Joe Gamble, thanks very much for joining us on the ExtraTime.com Friday podcast.
Thanks, Oisin, mate.
This is the ExtraTime.com Friday podcast. We're now joined by ExtraTime.com writer and reporter Dave Donnelly. Dave, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Dave, the crack is back. Last night meant something, and the atmosphere beforehand was quite good, and there was a lot of excitement around, judging by social media, and they were kind of the non-annoying type social media clips. Certainly not like the crap we got around Euro 2016. And then after the game, in the stadium, from what I could see on TV, the atmosphere was good. What was it like actually being there, actually walking to the ground, actually being in the stadium, talking to the players afterwards, walking home afterwards? What was it like?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit surreal. Having gone to games over the past 2 years and just, either an empty stadium or when a few fans were allowed in and it was kind of sparse enough. It's great to see the whole ground buzzing, dodging in and out, trying to get past people who are, getting in your way and everything. It's the kind of buzz that you remember from Ireland games way back when we were doing something, the Germanys and the Bosnias and all those games a few years ago. The buzz is back, but as well, I think in general, I think people are really enjoying the football as well. It's not just blood and thunder, rush, kick and rush, all that anymore. There's a bit of flair about it. And I think you could even hear the fans in the stadium. They got a little bit nervous when Bazuna was passing the ball out from the back or whatever. But, they really enjoyed it as well. And it's great to have something to cheer about as well, even if we didn't get the result in the end.
I mentioned already I wasn't at the game, and you were. So I'm curious to know, did Portugal look and have the feel of a team who weren't up for it? Because that's very much the accusation. And maybe, you know, people are using that as a stick to beat Ireland, which of course is not fair. But they are saying, well, you know what, it was a draw, but it was against a Portugal team who didn't put themselves out too much, didn't look overly worried, and therefore maybe it's not that big a deal. What's your reading of the situation, having been at the game, having been up close and personal with the Portugal players?
Well, I don't think any team with Ronaldo in it going after to cement his legacy is ever going to be less than up for it. He was, from the first minute to the last minute, he was trying to get his name on the score sheet. But overall, like they could have put out a better team. João Cancelo and Ruben Dias were left out because they're on yellow cards, and obviously Serbia is kind of the game for them that they now only need to get a draw from. So it wasn't the best team they could have put out. Certainly Cancelo would have caused us more problems than Semedo, and in general their back four looked a bit shaky overall. Danilo and Pepe in the middle. Pepe obviously was sent off late on. But in general, they looked a bit uncertain under our press, particularly in probably the first 20 minutes of the second half, when we really put a lot of pressure on them, and they kind of started to wilt a bit. But overall, it wasn't the best team they could have put out, but it was still a terrific team. It still had Ronaldo, Andrew Silva, Bruno
Fernandes.
Were they
Fernandez, trying, Dave? Were they up for it? Were they up for it? That's what I'm asking.
They were, yeah. But I think probably for the last 20 minutes or so, I think they realised that if they hang on and get the draw, that's all they need. But they were up for the game. I thought it was a very good game. I just thought, you know, Ireland maybe shaded it a little bit. Portugal probably had the better chances. But, you know, it was just a good game from two decent teams playing fairly well against each other.
Okay. Well, look, I'm glad to have chatted to you about that, because you always get a different view from someone who is in the stadium. And I think from what I could see from home, that relationship between the fans and the team, and maybe even the manager, is where it needs to be and where it should be. What about afterwards? You were in the press conferences, so you would have chatted to Stephen Kenny, Enda Stevens, and Shane Duffy. We heard a little bit from Kenny earlier on. He seemed happy. Was that his demeanor?
Yeah, I think he was just a little bit disappointed that the injury time non-goal didn't count. He was adamant it wasn't a foul. And he's just his usual self, kind of, very sort of thoughtful, took time over his answers, and then sort of finished off by saying that he thinks John Egan is a great player and he should be playing in the Champions League. So it was a typical Stephen Kenny press conference. But I think the mood amongst the players, Shane Duffy came out and was very, very forcefully suggesting that huge progress has been made and that he wants to see Stephen Kenny kept on. I think he said something along the lines of, if you think that we're not going in the right direction, you're writing the wrong things. And I think that kind of sums up what I've heard from a few of the different players over the last little while. And of course, it was kind of before any of the Irish players or manager came out, there was an interrogation of the Portuguese press of the Portugal manager Fernando Santos, which seemed to go on for absolute ever. It must have been about half an hour long, and there was no translator, so we were just kind of sitting there waiting. But it's just great to kind of have these big games back on again and have them feel like big games as well, because it's something that I think everyone has missed, whether you were going to an empty stadium or watching it on TV. Watching players play in front of an empty stadium, it's not ideal, but to have that buzz back is great.
And one of the debating points after the last couple of games was midfield, and it's something I didn't really get into as much as I'd like to have with Joe Gamble. So I'll ask you, can be my Joe. Jeff Hendrick and Josh Cullen, they were immense, weren't they?
Yeah, I think Jeff Hendrick is probably playing the best football of, you know, most of his career at the moment. Well, for Ireland anyway, he's not getting into the Newcastle team, but I don't think that'd be a huge worry to Stephen Kenny if he keeps playing like this. But Josh Cullen in particular, the progress he's made since heading over to Belgium has been immense, and he looks like a player that we can't afford to be without at the moment.
Yeah.
And he's just so tidy on the ball. He never gives it away. He takes the ball under pressure. He takes the ball forward. He can pick a pass. He can spray a pass long or short. He's he's just looks like the player that makes us tick at the moment. And the fact that we do only have the two midfielders in there, which means we're against a lot of teams, we're outnumbered unless our other players kind of tuck in and help out. But the fact that the two of them seem to be able to handle an awful lot of it themselves really bodes well for the future development of the team, because again, we do have other options going forward in there if any of those players have to drop out, the likes of Jason Knight and coming along, and Conor Hourihan came in today and played reasonably well in there as well. So
yeah,
it bodes well.
It really does. And Josh Cullen is an example of someone who didn't take the obvious route and is reaping the rewards. And I do wonder if more League of Ireland players will now go direct to the continent of Europe, having seen what Josh Cullen has done. Now, I know he's not a League of Ireland player and went from an English club. I actually forget what his home club is, but...
West Ham.
West Ham, thank you very much. And here's the thing, Mark Noble is aging and now they nearly have a like-for-like direct replacement for Mark Noble. But anyway, that's another debate. I do wonder, will Irish players now and players based in the League of Ireland look and say, you know what, he did that from Belgium as opposed to West Ham. Maybe that's where I could go. Maybe I could go to Belgium or Holland or whatever. And Jack Byrne did it. I don't think it seemed to do him any harm, even though he kind of didn't get... Even though he played his best stuff when he was with the Rovers. But anyway, that's a separate point. And before I move on, Dave, I want to ask about the Republic of Ireland under-21s. They're playing Italy in Talla Stadium this evening. It's a huge game for them. How do you think it'll go?
It's hard to know. I did watch the Jim Crawford's first game when he took over from Stephen Kenny midway through the last campaign, was away in Italy. They played a makeshift Italy team, which is more or less their, at the time it was a mixture of their under-20s and 21s, and a lot of those players would now have come through and would be the current team, and they were very good in that game. I do think, from having gone to the press conference during the week with, let's see who's there, Joel Bagan, Will Smallbone, Gavin Kilkenny and Jacob Ryan. The four of them, they were all fairly confident that they can go out and do something. And I think even though they don't come out and say it, they kind of realise that they probably need to win one of these two games. And it's hard to tell which one is more likely. Probably Sweden, just based on reputation. But they seem pretty confident going into it. But obviously, on the back of that disappointing Montenegro result, it's hard to know exactly how they'll do. But they do, squad-wise or numbers-wise, they look to be a bit stronger than they were that last time. So hopefully that feeds through to the team and they can really go and do something big and get right back into this group.
Okay, well, it's live on RTE2, so everyone can watch it, which is really good. And tonight... in the SSE Airtricity League, we've got a fairly big trio of games. Bowes and Shamrock Rovers, that's big for two reasons. One, it's a Dublin derby, and two, Bohemians are still kind of hunting down that European spot in the league, even though they have the cup final. St. Patrick's Athletic taking on Finn Harps. Finn Harps trying to avoid relegation. And Derry City against Sligo Rovers. Sligo secure in Europe, Derry are not.
Yeah, that's it. Bowes and Derry are really going for it. Dundalk have played an extra game and they might be, I think they're relying on a few favours that the other teams aren't, but certainly it's going to be a big day of football. I think there's going to be an awful lot of looking. There'll be some nervous eyes on results in other stadiums at the time. And I think it's going to be three very good games as well, but I'm going to the Bowes Rovers game myself, which is probably going to turn out to be an awful 0-0 just because I'm going. But it's going to be a good Friday night of football that will that'll have us all glued to our phones, hopefully, and watching a bit of decent football too.
Yeah, Finn Harps, I have to say, now that they've had a couple of days rest, I would fancy them to get a result against St. Patrick's Athletic, even though it's at home. St. Pat's, Alan Matthews said it after the 3-0 defeat to Sligo, guys need to realise they're playing for places in the cup final. And maybe that will spark them, Dave, because there is a good bit of competition in that squad, isn't there? They have options, like.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Slav Jaros, the Liverpool loan goalkeeper, he'll be away. He's away with the Czech under-21s. So it'll be interesting to see if they give a run out to the under-19 keeper, Josh Keeley, or if Stephen O'Donnell sticks with the experienced Barry Murphy. But in terms of the squad, yeah, they've kind of rotated a good bit in the last couple of games. I think it was six changes for the last two games.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to have suited them very well. It's kind of the chopping and changing has made them maybe a little bit disjointed over those two games.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know whether they'll go with a few more changes again or try and give those players another chance to prove themselves. But again, they've got the job done. They have their European spot now. So it's hard to know which way that'll go. It might be a couple of players kind of protecting themselves for the cup final too. But again, as you say, they're also playing for places in that final. And from what Alan Matthews said the other day, there definitely are a couple of places that are up for grabs.
Derry City against Sligo Rovers, that's a game that kind of nearly sells itself. I know Sligo have achieved their aim for the season, but Derry desperately need a win there. Tomorrow night, Longford taking on Waterford, and it'll be interesting to see what pressure will be on Waterford going into that game, depending on what happens in the Finn Harps game. Bows and Rovers, it's a case that Rovers won't have any fans there, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, they've been not invited. From what I know, a lot of the Rovers brass are also not going. So it'll be, I suppose, a hostile atmosphere as it was the last time for the cup semi or the cup quarter final, which I don't think worked out too great for anyone. But it's going to be an interesting atmosphere. It's going to be a near full stadium anyway. Bowes, obviously, similar to Pats, as players playing for cup final places, but they're also desperately trying to get that fourth spot so that it doesn't matter what the result is in that cup final. But it's a tough one. Three Bowles players also away, Ireland under 21s, Dawson Devoy, Ross Tierney and Andy Lyons, who've all been three of their biggest players all season. Andy Lyons obviously scored the winner in the cup game at Daly Mount. So there'll be three big losses. Roberto Lopez is also missing for Rovers on international duty. So there'll be a few players out. There might be a few fringe players on both teams will get a chance that they might otherwise not have gotten. And also there's, you know, the Danny Mandrew subtext. We'll all see how that goes as well. So promises to be entertaining, if nothing else, which again, as I say, guarantees a 0-0 draw.
I have to say, this thing of each club not giving an away allocation really irritates me. I think it's really petty. We're in a situation as League of Ireland people, and I'll refer to myself as that, even though I'm a floating voter. I wouldn't be like a diehard, but I do love the league. I love going to matches and all that. But the league needs to grow, right? If you're a product that's in the place that the league is at the moment, you need more people following you. And the benefits of that are self-explanatory. It makes you more relevant to advertisers. It means you have more punters coming through the door. It means you have more punters interacting with your club, even if they don't come through the door. Maybe they buy the stream. Maybe they buy the merchandise. And this sends out a really bad message that these businesses can't interact with each other. And these clubs and these entities can't interact with each other. And it comes across as petty and immature and just silly. And like, one of the things that really put me off about the league in the 2000s was that pettiness and was that immaturity. And like, that's happened throughout history, that, you know, the famous quote of you're dealing with a league where the clubs steal each other's footballs, you know, small mind. And people, there's a lot of people out there who still think of it as the chicken league, small minded, petty, and they think of League of Ireland as that lot. And as long as stuff like this is going on, they'll still think of League of Ireland as that lot. And maybe they shouldn't, and maybe it's lazy thinking, but this kind of stuff fuels that, and it doesn't help. And I think the clubs need to get over themselves, because they're two clubs who do great stuff. I mean, they do fantastic stuff. Look at the work they do off the pitch. Look at the work they do on the pitch. Two fantastic clubs, and they need to get over themselves and get this sorted. They don't have to be friends, but they do have to realize that they're businesses and they have to be mature. That's my. You don't have to say anything, Dave, if you don't want to incriminate yourself. That's fine.
Is that like your Ushie and Langan talk for the day sort of thing?
That's my rant. I've been thinking about this for a couple of days, and I have to say it, and the frustrating thing is that they are great clubs. They are running themselves incredibly well, the two of them, and they're doing so much good stuff, but something like this takes away from that, I think.
Well, they, look, they don't like each other. They never have. So that's always going to be a thing. I don't think having a bitter rivalry is necessarily a bad thing for the league either.
That's fine. But denying away fans and away supporters tickets is. Like Cliff Barnes and J.R. Ewing at the height of their rivalry didn't do anything as immature as that. Because that would have been bad for business. I know they'll probably sell it out and I know that it doesn't matter, but I just think it doesn't come across well. It doesn't put the league across well.
Yeah, I suppose not. But sure, we'll see what happens. Everything calms down eventually, doesn't it? And you know, adults take not saying they're not adults, but you know, the authorities will take over and kind of push people in the right direction and it'll all calm down. Eventually it'll be fine. But.
I hope it does. I really hope it does. Dave, I put you in an impossible position of my final thoughts there. So sorry about that. You're going to Bowes and Shamrock Rovers tonight and we can follow your work on extratime.com and a few other outlets. Thank you very much for joining us on the extratime.com Friday podcast. And by the way, as I say, Dave did a big detailed preview of the Women's National League on Monday night. So if you want to check that out, by all means, go back to that. Dave, thank you very much.
Very welcome.
Well, that's it for the extratime.com Friday podcast. We're back on Monday when we look back on the Republic of Ireland against Luxembourg. We'll also talk about the under-21s who are playing Italy tonight in Tala. Hopefully the under-19s will get a couple of wins as well. Tonight at the RDS, best of luck to the Irish women's rugby team who take on the USA. The men up against New Zealand tomorrow. We'll talk about all of that on Monday. And we'll look back on some of the Gaelic Games action across hurling, camogie and ladies football and Gaelic football as well. Remember, you can contact us via Twitter at Extra Time News or you can get me on at Oisin Langan. Don't forget, obviously, busy weekend in the League of Ireland and you can follow all the coverage and everything that's happening on extratime.com. That's it. I'll talk to you Monday. Have a good weekend.